guys, welcome back to another ESL podcast. Oh my god, today you're in for a special treat. You know what? I've known this person. His name is Andre. I've known him for 20 years. I'm going to let him get into the stories and everything and the trials and the tribulations of what we've been through in our life. But this man, born and raised in Puerto Rico, San Juan, right? San Juan or Ponce?
San Juan. Well, I was born there, lived there for 10 years, and then I moved to Las Vegas.
Okay. And then, so what he did, of course, born there, he told me some crazy stories about living there in an apartment complex. I'm getting a lot of memories coming through They're coming back to me. But Andre, he moved to America, okay? At the age of 10, not knowing any English. This is why I brought this man on here, and because I love him like I do my next breath. Andre, man, thanks so much for coming on with your crazy behind.
Anytime.
So, Andre, go ahead.
No, like you said, born in Puerto Rico, lived until I was 10, moved to Las Vegas when I was 10, and not one bit of English. They taught us maybe like the regular words, like you, me, I, cat, dog, you know. And even as those words, when we were younger, we barely even knew what they were. You had to come out here and you had to face the music yourself with no English in a nation that is mostly English. So, but go ahead, continue.
Yeah, I love it because you said, okay, so there was one thing I said. I said, my bad, which means I'm sorry for all of you out there that don't understand. So there's going to be a lot of slang on this podcast because, of course, when I talked to my boy over here, Andre, and then you said, face the music. Andre, what does face the music mean?
Face the music, basically, it is like, you know, when you're not used to something.
Uh-huh.
And
I love that saying.
You come face to face with something that you've never seen, and it's basically like almost like a surprise. Like you're right there, and you have to be ready to take whatever it is that you're getting ready to take. Basically, what it is. I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but
I got you with that one. That was so funny. You were trying, Andre.
I tried, but you know, it's not always it doesn't always come out the right way.
Yeah, it's all good. Okay, so here we go. Went there, 10 years old. No, so what were the things that you did to start learning English? Of course, living in an English speaking environment made it a lot better. But again, you had moved to Vegas with all your sisters, your mother, and so Spanish was still being spoken in the household.
No, Spanish was definitely being spoken in the household. Mm-hmm. Predominantly. You had my grandma, my uncle, and my sisters watching Spanish shows, you know, novelas, which is soap operas.
Novelas.
You had Spanish cartoons and all that stuff. And you know, when I was going to school, all these kids were speaking English, and I didn't understand not one bit what they were saying. So I had to take it upon myself to be like, you know what, I gotta step away from my family a little bit. I have to learn the language. So what I did is that I started watching Sesame Street and the Disney Channel. I didn't understand not one bit of words they were saying, but I just kept watching it every day. And sure enough, what, 3 months later, I was speaking better Spanish than a lot of kids in the class. I mean, better English. I'm sorry, better English than a lot of kids up there. They have put me in a. Cause that was through the summer. That was through the summer. Going into fifth grade, and when I went to fifth grade, they put me into a bilingual class. They would teach you some English and whatnot. And within like 2 weeks, they knew I didn't need it because I had learned English through the summer just watching Sesame Street and the Disney Channel.
Wow, man! And so, I mean, what was that? Wait, did you have to go into like an ESL class before going into regular classes with, you know, the other students?
Yes. Wow. They have put me into an ESL class with a whole bunch of Latinos,
you know,
over there who didn't know any English at all. Uh-huh. My sisters and them were not in my class, but they will also do that. And if you when you move from a different country, they usually bring you back a grade because they want you to catch up. Once you learn the language, they want you to catch up. They don't want you to fall behind. But because I had already learned the language, they didn't feel the need to bring me back a grade. I still stay in the same grade that I was supposed to. Unlike my sisters, who didn't take that opportunity to learn the English language, they got moved back a grade, which is why I was always a grade ahead of them, even though they were only a year behind. Well, the second oldest was only a year behind me, and she was 2 grades behind me.
Right. Okay. So of course, me knowing all your sisters and whatnot, what were some of the big things that you had to overcome when you first started learning English? Now, you said you moved to America at 10, so what was that? Roughly 1997, right?
1997, April 13th is when I came out here.
Wow, that was just literally a day ago. Yeah, oh, well, actually, we're speaking in the future because I'm going to post this towards the end of the month. So, yeah, anyways. Damn.
Even if you're going to post this some other time, basically today would be the 22nd year anniversary of me arriving in the United States.
Were you scared when you came? When you went? Sorry, it's funny because I'm not here. So were you scared when you went to the USA? Like, did you know that you would have to, like, overcome a lot of things, not speaking English? I mean, as a child, you would, of course, be, you know, scared as hell.
Well, it was a different feeling. I mean, one day your uncle just says, okay, everybody get dressed, we're leaving. And, you know, you have to leave all your friends behind. Like, it wasn't something that was planned. It wasn't something that everybody had talked about. I mean, nobody's going to talk to a whole bunch of kids. Like, when we came out here, it was 6 of us.
Right.
You know? It was my grandma with 6 of us. You know, and I was the oldest from the group. My oldest brother wasn't with us, and that's a different story. That's, you know, but
Jorge!
It was me, 4 sisters, and a little boy, which was my brother. I said was, but that's a different story altogether.
Right.
But when we came out here, nobody told us nothing. We just said, you're about to go on a plane, and you're leaving Puerto Rico. So I didn't really have a chance to say goodbye to my friends. I really don't remember. When you're that little, you really don't always remember your friends' last names and stuff like that. So all those friendships that you form from when you're born to when you're 10 disappear. Because now you can't even find them. Even with social media, it's difficult. So it was just like leaving. It was basically almost like you're creating a completely different life, you know, by force. Because you don't really know anything. You know, it was more of that to me than my sisters. My sisters were still young, even though the second oldest is like only a year younger than me.
Right.
But it was easier for her to adapt to living in the U.S. Than it was for me. With me, like I said, I had to overcome a little bit more obstacles just because I understood a little bit more. And because I was... At the time, I was a lot smarter than a lot of kids my age, so I understood more things faster. But it was like being thrown. It was like coming from the desert, or coming from like basically the same thing. Like, I was born in tropical, and then you move to the desert like one day. You know, it's like they just throw you in, and they're like, okay, here, now learn this language and hope you survive.
So you said something really, really funny, and this just brought back another memory. Your grandmother did not like me, Andre.
Oh no, she hated you.
Why? What? She hated me. Like, Andre, I was so young. I didn't know why one human being would hate another human being. Andre, why did she hate me? Is it because I was black, right?
Well, it's a little bit more than that, but basically no. But
what I do?
I told you before, my grandmother, she wasn't born in Puerto Rico. She was sent to Puerto Rico to work as a maid when she was younger. Mm. She's originally from Spain. Mm. And when she grew up, you know, she grew up in the servitude. She was like, my grandma was really white. She was like one of the whitest people in Puerto Rico. Mm. And then when she finally married, when she finally settled down on a man, that man was what she hated the most, but ended up loving the most. Mm. You know, my grandfather, he was the darkest man in Puerto Rico, you know? And she ended up falling in love with him, and, you know, she had kids with him, my mom and my uncle and, you know, like two other kids. But when we went to Vegas, it was a completely different black from what she saw in Puerto Rico, you know?
Yeah.
It was a completely different African, because in Puerto Rico, you see Africans. You know, the dark skin colors of the dark skin people in Puerto Rico, they're African descended. They're not sure. African American. So what I'm saying is that,
of course, through the transatlantic,
not only like
descendants.
I'm not saying slaves, like they behave differently. Mm. Okay. You know, and she just didn't like black people in America, and I didn't understand that because. I didn't understand that because I would look at my grandfather's picture and I would look at my mom because my mom is dark skinned. And I would never understood why she didn't like, you know, black people, and it kind of bothered me because when we grew up it was mainly Mexicans and blacks,
right?
You know, and we have friends on both sides,
right?
Why did my grandma? You know, I don't know, but. She basically hated you because you were not black from Puerto Rico, even though she knew you were Puerto Rican.
Yeah. Which is crazy. And of course, being a young child, I didn't really understand what hate was, of course, until 2002. And then that's when I started experiencing racial hatred all around Las Vegas, of course, right. At Rancho High School and whatnot. But next, you know, she started cooking for me and she started accepting me. I remember that. It was like 2001.
Yeah, well, you know, my grandma, she was raised, like I said, my grandma would never let nobody go hungry. Mm. My grandma was a cook, and she was a pretty good one, and she was also famous in Puerto Rico. But my grandma would never let nobody go hungry. If there was food in the house, you had it. You know, whether she hated you or loved you, you had food. But no, my grandma did like you because, like, I would say she like at first I said she hated you, but it's like it's just her mentality was just old school, you know. It's not. It wasn't. I don't know. She was just weird like that. But at the end of the day, my grandma would cook for you, like you said. She would make sure you if there was food in the house, you ate. You know, but she also did that to my sister's friends and, you know, and everybody else. And
sure.
As you know, most of our friends ended up being African American.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, she had no choice but to accept, you know, she tried to fight it, but it is what it is. Not, you know, if she was still alive, you know, my sisters have mixed kids. You know, she had to accept who we ended up growing to be. So, you know, we didn't grow up with those same values. We didn't grow up hating black people. We grew up loving them. Okay. You know, we grew up loving African Americans and accepting Mexicans into our world. Even though we spoke different languages and people made fun of that at first, you know, different Spanish people make fun of that.
Right.
But we ended up growing up together and accepting each other and, you know, becoming friends and stuff like that. Vegas is not an easy place to grow up in, but it also teaches you the real world, you know? You end up learning a lot, you know, from being in Vegas. You end up learning what's real, what's wrong, what's fake. You end up knowing real people, fake people. Vegas is always a school. That's just basically what it is.
Oh, I hear you. You know, and just being in the neighborhoods that we grew up in. And of course, we all know how both you and I met. And so I want you to tell the people how we ended up meeting. How did we originally meet? Man.
I always get confused with the year, but I think it was like 1999. About that time, Pokemon was going crazy.
Oh yeah,
you know, it was Pokemon everything. Pokemon everything.
Right.
So, you know, we both had a mutual friend which we didn't know. We had his name was David Bruno.
His name is David Bruno.
I would say it was.
Yeah.
David Bruno, and we ended up arguing over a Pokemon card, which I still don't know which Pokemon card it was, you know, and we ended up almost fighting over the Pokemon card.
Right.
And then I don't know what it was. And then once we realized that we both knew David Bruno easily, that, you know, the argument finished, and then we became friends. Like, you know, kids just killing languages. I mean, just killing arguments out of nowhere, just over Pokemon card, and because you knew somebody the same.
Right.
But at that time, I think I was 12. You were what, 11?
Yeah.
So we were still young. Uh-huh. And but we met because of a Pokemon card. Because we almost fought over a Pokemon card.
Yeah.
And back in my old neighborhood, Casa Rosa.
Yep.
You know, right in front of David Bruno's house.
Man, it is so funny how that ended up happening. Man, I'm telling you, Andre and I, man, we've been through so much. And of course, you know, something that really hits us really hard, and especially Andre, he ended up, unfortunately, you know, losing a sister and what I did, you know, deemed to be a best friend, a family. To leukemia and whatnot. Right. So what Andre had to go through, God, man, I mean, to be able to come out on the other side of what you've been through, Andre, it's just amazing. And being able to look back on the last 20 years, of course, going from, what is it, Puerto Rico to America, going through all that craziness in Casa Rosa, you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, you, of course, coming to the Bone Game with I... Okay, and this was in 2005, and then he ended up meeting one of my friends by the name of Dominique, and they ended up dating for about, I don't know how many years. This had to be about 3 years, right?
No, it was actually two.
2 years. Okay, so 2005, then 2007 was a big blah. That was it, right?
Yeah.
2008? Yeah, pretty much 07. Yeah, because you ended up going to the Navy. But there was a special moment in that time, and it was just before Christmas in 2006. And there was one morning I said, Andre, let's do a hike. And you said, okay, where? And I said, let's go to Sunrise Mountain, which is the biggest.
You got to bring this up. You want people to laugh at you. That's what that is.
Oh, my God. Andre, I want them to give... Yeah, I want you to give your side of the story, because I actually told some people, well, I wouldn't say tell some people, but I told them my side of the story very, very lightly and whatnot. And it was like,
basically you liked them. Got
it. It was a speaking activity. And I said, this man, Andre, is going to have a story that is a bunch of bull, you know, a bull jive. You know what I'm saying? So Andre, tell the world what happened on that morning. That afternoon, too.
So, you, me, and Dominique, we decided to climb, I believe it was Sunrise Mountain up there in Vegas. And we just, I don't know why, but we just decided to start climbing it. We ended up climbing it. There's a little bit of snow up there. When we started going up, it was a little bit, you know, and we finally reached the top, the summit, and we don't know how we can't figure out how to get back down, because we have to actually climb a pretty vertical side to get to where we were. And you started panicking like crazy.
I started panicking. How did I start panicking?
You kept looking for a way to get out. We saw like a little station there where we wouldn't go in. There was a lot of snow now up there, and you looked over a cliff, which I have to say was like maybe 50 feet.
I know, damn 50 feet. That was like 4,000.
You kept telling me it was like 200 feet down, and we couldn't make it. And I was like, so. We started panicking like crazy, and we had to call the rescue team. So,
why did we call them?
We called them because you really want me to tell them that you were crying over the top because you couldn't get down?
And so what happened after that?
We got rescued by a helicopter. One at a time.
One at a time.
We got rescued by helicopter.
Do you remember what the police said to us? Like when they got off the helicopter, yep, were you scared?
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. They told us there was a trail to leave down right next to where we were.
But the thing is, it was about 4 p.m. We didn't have lights. We didn't have climbing things. We didn't have anything.
But still. You were so worried about getting down and panicking that I didn't even assess the situation. Me and Dominique were just looking at each other like, what is this? You know, so we called the rescue team, and we got rescued by helicopter.
Oh, my God.
That was my first helicopter ride, I'll tell you that, though, and it was awesome.
First and last, and the police, I swear, he was like, listen. If you don't hang on to this, you're going to fall out. You're going to die. Bloom, black, split. He did not give a damn. Like, he was so, it was, oh my God. He looked at us in disgust. He was like, what are you guys doing? Like, what's going on over here? And you know me, I'm over here
panicking.
Because
we basically wasted the time. We were teenagers climbing a mountain, we could have went down the trail. But you weren't hearing it. You needed to go down ASAP. So they took us by helicopter one at a time.
That was so
the helicopter
funny.
Had to come up, had to land three times.
Yes, he had to land. Who went down first? Dominique, right?
I think Dominique went down first because she was a girl. Then it was you, and I was last.
And there, who was at the ground? Who was at the ground when you got down there? There were a lot of people, huh?
There was a lot of people. Think because they probably thought that we were just lost or something. I was like, these kids just came out of nowhere. They just rescued these guys, and I'm over here thinking like, man, we were just right there.
They know right there. That was a high mountain. All right, I was freaking out.
It was
yes.
high. I never said it wasn't. But, you know, everybody else made it seem like it was a big deal, you know?
Oh, my God, man. I ended up calling my mom, which was, like, the worst mistake ever. And she ended up telling Steven.
Oh, no, you definitely can call your mom. Your mom was going crazy.
Oh, my God. And then she told Steven that Steven wanted to fight me. Of course, when I got home, he's like, no, man, no. You know how Steven is. No, no, man, what the? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, you need to calm down. It's my life. You know what I'm saying? So anyways, oh, my God.
He was your brother. Yeah. He's your brother. You know, at the time, he was just crazy.
Yeah. So, oh, man. So, again, Andre, after going through that, then he went to the Navy, him and I, you know, as friends. And this is how we ended up becoming, you know, so strong because, again, during the summer months, Andre and I, my brother and I, we had a lot of tension. And so I ended up moving out. Andre had finished up with his A school in the Navy. We moved in together into I would say it was a beautiful apartment.
It was wonderful. That was a sexy apartment.
That was fantastic. And I remember we moved in there, and then there were a lot of things that ended up happening. Now, of course, I had a girlfriend at the time. Of course, you remember her, right, Andre? Christine, I think that was
her. Yeah, of course.
And
Of course.
Yeah, and then Andre, he started hanging around with Mark and a couple other guys and this and that. And then we had to entertain my friend, Satomi. Do you remember Satomi, right? And
I remember Satomi.
Yeah, Nakagawa.
How can I forget Satomi? From Kyoto,
that's right. And I got a lot of Japanese people that listen to this, so they're probably like, oh my god, you had a Japanese friend, you know what I mean? So it's so funny because after that, our relationship fell apart. Of course, all this craziness happened. You and I, our friendships fell apart because, you know, hey, you know, first and foremost, we were young. We were doing things and this. There were outer influences. And,
right.
And then we stopped talking until April of the following year. You emailed me. And we picked up right where we left off. It was no problem. Because, again, there was a lot of tension between us. We were arguing like crazy. I think it was around September of 2008. But
right.
But then 7 months later, we squashed everything just like that. And that's when, you know, in 2009.
Do you remember what I said to you, though?
How
we started talking again?
It was about the Steelers, right? The Steelers won the Super Bowl.
The Steelers won the Super Bowl.
But I also saw your brother going crazy outside across the street from me, too. He was trying to fight. It was just craziness and whatnot. So,
you're talking about George. No longer George.
George. I didn't want to say that. I'm just going to call him from what, you know, I knew him as. You know, George ended up doing his thing. Andre, if he wants to tell you, he can. If he doesn't, that's all good. You know what I'm saying? But, oh, my God.
You're right. George was going crazy outside. Then I kind of had to step in a bit because I don't know if you had saw, but you can ask Steven. Steven saw, somebody had pulled out a gun.
Yeah. You know? Welcome to my life, and, guys. This is my life back then.
My little brother, I had to step in the middle. So I basically just told him, if you're gonna try to shoot my brother, you gotta shoot me first. It is what it is.
Oh my god.
You know, eventually all the argument died down and everybody went their separate ways, but I don't remember what the argument was about.
Right.
I just remember the craziness.
Yeah, probably about, a week, 2 weeks? I can't remember when that happened. I thought it was around March. I can't remember. But after that, I remember we started talking again. And you were there when I booked my trip. You were there at the airport when I went to Australia for the first time. You were there when I made the biggest transition in my life. That was the beginning of the new me. And I remember my mom was crying, and I was like, Mom, why are you crying? You're like, well, you're the one going to Australia, which is like 10,000 miles away. It was so funny. But Andre was there during so many of the biggest things that happened in my life. And then, of course, Andre, you ended up moving to New York, and I'm glad you did because it just seemed like couldn't catch a break from a lot of things that were happening out there in Vegas. And so what made you move to New York?
It started going crazy. And Vegas, like, I love Vegas. You know, I got Sin City tattooed on my arm. You know, I grew up in Vegas with my best friends, I met in Vegas. My mom and my sisters and my nieces and nephews are still out there. But out there, I just couldn't catch a break. Like you said, I was getting into trouble, and I saw the opportunity to come out here. I growing up, I never knew my dad, and my sisters and my brothers and sisters from his side. And you know, one day they found me on MySpace. Wow. And you know, we started talking to them in like 2010. You know, I was talking to them, you know, a lot, and then my brother asked me if I wanted to go out there and visit me and my dad. You know, I was like, you know what, that's fine. At the time, I wasn't really doing a lot. I was jumping around from place to place. I really wasn't catching a job during that year, and so I really didn't have a lot. So my brother asked to pay for the everything out here, and he He brought me out here. I met my father, came out here for like a week, and that was in like May, because that was his wife's birthday. So I came out here to visit, met my father, and then I came back. I went back to Vegas, went back to the same things, you know, doing nothing, getting into trouble, messing with the wrong girls. It's, you know, and finally, I asked my brother asked me if I want to live out here. I said, no problem. You have to give me a bid. I have to gather some things to get a ticket out there. Anyways, like I said, my brother, he asked me to come out here to move. And I told him he had to give me a bid to gather up some money to get a plane ticket to come out here. And what I actually ended up doing, because I still held contact with Dominique's parents. And they own a medical electronic company. So, you know, I had asked them if there was any way that they had a free plane ticket to go to New York. And her dad was literally, give me one bit and I'll get back to you. Call me right back within like 20 minutes and told me I was leaving to New York the next morning at 6 a.m.
Wow. So, and you know what? Real quick, before I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Dominique's parents, they were the most wonderful, charitable souls I've ever met in my life. It was them who got me to college in Arizona. You know what I mean? They were the ones that were working around the clock. Okay, let me call Coach Shirley, the track and field coach. Okay, Arsenio, your FAFSA. Okay, we got to do this. After getting everything and the blood drawn, the shots, he said, okay, Arsenio, it's time to call your mother. You are leaving to Arizona tomorrow morning. And I remember I called my mom and she started, you know, she was crying and everything. I was just 18. So Dennis has been, he was one of the most significant driving forces, especially in our lives, because they enabled us to get out there to our apartment too. They helped us a lot.
Yeah. Dennis and Anna were amazing people. They were the ones, when I went to the military, I had to do a lot of things, and they were always there. They were like, Andre, you need to do this. I'm taking you, no problem. Andre, you're going this way. I'm going to pick you up. You're going to go there. We're going to do this, and we're going to do that. You know, and they were there all the way up until I left to boot camp, you know. And even after me and their daughter broke up, they were still there, you know. They always wanted what was best for people, you know. And that's always who they've been. So they told me, okay, so you're leaving to New York at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. And they told me this, it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, that happened to me too. That had 12 hours later, I was moving to Arizona just like you were going to New York. Unbelievable.
I was going to New York in 14 hours, and I was with my mom, and I told her, I was like, well, mom, I'm leaving tomorrow. Love you. I can't go and visit everybody and say I'm leaving. Call Leroy and tell Jana and them that I love them, and then I'll see them when I see them. Mm-hmm. You know, I left a lot of things behind. I had my red Civic that I left, my two snakes that I had left with Leroy,
yeah,
my cousin, and I had left Drake, which was a present from Dominique. It was a bearded dragon.
Yeah,
I left them with my sister Jana, and I got dropped off at the airport by another ex girlfriend of mine.
What was her name? Tanya?
Tiffany, you remember Tiffany.
Tiffany, yeah!
Tiffany.
Oh, my God.
So she dropped me off at the airport. And, you know, that was it. Then I came out here to New York. New York, I ended up getting a job almost instantly with my father's company, and a company where my father worked at.
Wow.
And from there, I just kept moving up. I became warehouse manager. I became branch manager, you know, and ended up having my kids out here.
Right.
You know, and
you have two wonderful sons.
Two little boys.
Hey, who would have ever imagined? You know what? I remember, like, when I first met you, you just had your mother. But then you had some really successful, you had like a foundation out there in New York. Your brothers were pretty successful. Then you reconnected with your father too. Were you ever at a connection with your father, when you were in Las Vegas? And then when you went out there, you were like, hey, and your father started crying. I remember when you first saw him, he started, I can't remember. It's like really vague, but yeah.
If you want to get down and dirty, I'll tell you. We go get down to the truth. It's always the truth. Before I saw my father back again in 2010, I hadn't seen him since I was seven.
Okay,
that would be 1995.
Wow.
No, I'm sorry, 1994.
Wow.
Was the last time I saw him, and he took me to an arcade, and then that was it. I didn't see. He left Puerto Rico, and I didn't see him. I didn't see him from then. My father saw me. My brothers found me on MySpace, and they gave my father my number. At that time, I was working a lot of jobs, and my father ended up calling me in the morning, and he basically was like, hey, what's going on? This is Andy, you know, your dad. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to call you back because I'm sleeping. And I hung up on him. You know, I really didn't like him at the time. I mean, like, I didn't want to hear that after 15, 17 years, you know, like, hey, this is your father. You know, I really didn't want to hear that at the time. So I hung up on him. You know, it's what anybody with father issues would do at the time.
Absolutely. I'd still do it today.
But, you know, when I came out here, honestly, something told me just let it go. You know, something really strong inside me was like, you know, don't harbor any ill feelings towards your father. Just let it go. You know, be better than everybody expects you to be. You know, so I let it go and I gave him a chance. You know, I gave his wife a chance. And I still speak to them to this day, you know, my father's wife, we have a lot of love for each other, even though her and my mom may be rivals or whatever. They don't speak at all ever. Probably would never speak, but she loves me, and I love her she's my father's wife, but. Like I said, I let go of those feelings, those angry feelings, and I came out here in October, and unfortunately, my father ended up passing away in January.
Oh my God!
2011.
I didn't know that.
Wow. Yeah, my father ended up passing away in January 2011, which was only like not even 6 months after I saw him.
Wow.
And it was hard. It was hard mainly because everybody expects you to have strong feelings for him. I gave him the chance to not be an angry person, but to know him as a person, I really didn't know him as a person. So when you lose somebody who you don't really know, you know, you can't force yourself to feel what everybody else who's known him the whole life feels.
Sure, absolutely, 100%. You know? Yeah.
So I got a lot of angry eyes my way because I wasn't feeling like the way they were feeling, you know. But there was nothing that they could do. I mean, I'd known the man for 5 months, 3 months when he was still good, you know. And then the last two, he was in the hospital, you know, in and out of hospitals all day long. So it wasn't like I knew the man really good, you know. Did I love him like my dad? Of course I did. You know, I might say that I didn't get to know him like I wanted to. Yes, I am. But, you know, I can't say that, you know, I was as hurt as everybody else wanted me to be. You know, and it's a messed up thing to say. But, I mean, like I didn't know the feeling that everybody wanted me to pretend to have. Right. You know?
Yeah. Wow. But do you think you have a what is it? A sense of what is it? What is it? A closure because you met him just before he passed away. Do you think it would have been different?
Like, closure,
you
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I said, I didn't really get to have a father, you know.
Yeah.
I got a grown man who accepted me, and I accepted him. You know, I remember one time, and that was literally like the only thing I told him that was maybe out of place. One time, I was dating this girl when I first came out here, and I was living with him, and. He told me, you know, he called me, asked me how long was I going to be out. I told him I was 23 at the time. I told him, I was like, I don't know. I mean, you know, he was like, oh, well, don't come back too late. Because Mara, his wife, is going to be worried. I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to come home. Don't worry about it. And I hung up on him. Like, it kind of got me upset.
Yeah.
It kind of got me upset that he was trying to be a father now when I'm 23 years old, telling me I have a curfew.
Absolutely.
I was like, no. Yeah. No, brother, man.
I understand.
I'll take care of it. Don't worry about it.
Okay. All right. These are some really good, honest conversations. And this is definitely something I'm going to have to bring you on to do, like a Be Live TV, like a Facebook Live or something like that, to overcome things like that, because I think what you've especially overcome and whatnot. So, I mean, well, all in all, Andre, if you sum up the relationship with your father and you not coming back that night, this and that, do you have any regrets whatsoever?
Regrets? No.
Okay.
And it's funny that you say regret, because you of all people know how crappy, you know, my life to most people would seem.
Yeah.
You know, from foster care to Navy, getting out of the Navy, and, you know, moving from place to place, not really having a place to stay. Regret is not a word that I would ever use again. Because when you're young and you lose all these things and you have a whole bunch of bad things happen to you, people always are quick to use the word regret, you know? And if I was to use the word regret, it would be hurtful, because everything that I've ever done, everything that has ever happened to me has led me to where I am now. And right now, I can't say regret, because I have two beautiful little boys.
Absolutely.
Who love me almost as much as I love them, you know? And to regret my past is to really regret the chance of them actually happening, you know. So I don't regret anything, you know. I do wish that I would have more time with my father. I do wish that maybe my father would have met them, you know, but I don't regret anything at all. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, and that's exactly what people have to look at life as. If you look at everything, I didn't even mention the foster house that you lived in. Logan, who is now, what is he, a millionaire entrepreneur?
Yeah, he is a millionaire entrepreneur.
And he lived in the same foster home.
My foster brother, Logan.
Yes. You see what I mean? I just don't look. Sometimes we have to look at it from like an outer body experience to say, okay, if we look at everything I've been through, I saw my mother waving a knife in my father's face when I was young. Yes. I had to go to school with water shoes. Yes. I was picked on. Yes. I had to, I remember that when my mother finally got custody of us from my father back in 1999, she said, you guys were so skinny. I remember not eating and going to school or going home or, you know, going to bed at night hungry. I remember all these things. I remember Steven Allshouse in our band, Andre. He got ran over. He was killed.
Oh, Steven.
He got ran over
saving his sister.
You see what I mean?
But it was crazy, because you know, you bring up Stephen Allhouse. He actually, you know, brings up another good point. We were bullied when we were younger. We were bullied in school because we were what they call, you know, we were poorer than a lot of people.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. And when we saw people who were doing worse than us as kids, mm-hmm. you know, you for some reason you wanted to make yourself be a little bit bigger. So we ended up making fun of other people.
Yes.
You know? And although we were being bullied, we ended up bullying other people. So now we ended up bullying Stephen Allhouse, the guy who played French Horn.
Yep.
You know? And then we learned that he died. He died saving his little sister from a giant 18-wheeler. Mm. And we made fun of this guy. It makes us look like crap.
Yeah.
For even doing that, you know? Because you never know what people are actually made of. Mm. You know, just because you look at them and you don't see anything of worse, mm. you don't know what they're actually made of. And Stephen Allhouse was made of all the heroic things ever.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if he knew that it was the end for him, but he knew that it wasn't the end for his sister. Mm. So he pushed her out of the way. And, you know, he unfortunately ended up dying. But yeah, Stephen Allhouse, I remember, French horn player in our band. In the band, we played band, Arsenio.
Yes.
We were in band.
Yes. Baritone, you were a tuba player. You did not come to festival. You did not come to festival, Andre. Because I don't what was your excuse again? If you had come to festival, we would have gotten a superior in band. Do you remember that?
Well, yeah, I needed the tuba player. That's what it is.
Yeah. And Julio was a gangster, wasn't he? He was like the contra bass, the contra tuba, or whatever you want to call that thing. It was like a, was that tuba? It was like a big one. I forgot the name of it.
Julio was just basically a thug.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he was
talented.
He was the deeper tuba.
Yeah.
You know, because the tuba made basically the background.
Yep.
And then you had the background to the background, which was Julio.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when we were in open house and we all had, like, I don't know if you were there, and they made us play a solo of We Will Rock You. I don't think it was We Will Rock. I think it was 1812 Overture.
Yep, that's it. Right? Yes.
And they made us stand up one by one for a solo.
Yeah.
I was the only tuba at the time. And they made me stand up. First of all, I was like 80 pounds. I was like 80 pounds soaking wet with a big giant tuba.
Uh-huh.
I remember they made us take the instrument home. I had to use a shopping cart because I wasn't strong enough to push that or to hold that all the way to the house. Mm. Oh man, you're bringing back a lot of memories, man. A lot of memories.
And you know, I remember after that. So many things, I'm telling you, man. I mean, and it's amazing. Now seeing myself in Thailand at the age of 30, you at the age of 31, you having two wonderful sons now, and you're doing big things at the warehouse. And I mean, just sum it all up, and I'm going to have to do another one of these because there are so many things we haven't covered. And it's crazy because when we go into these depths, we do unveil some things that were like, oh my God. I just triggered that, and it triggered this emotional reaction. You know what I mean? But, Andre, if you could sum up everything you've been through for anyone out there and for everyone out there who's going through hell. Now, we cannot compare hells. Everyone has their own personal hell. But what have you learned, and what actionable steps would you give to someone whereas they, you know, they're going through the things they've been through, let's just say a passing away or – they've been ostracized, they've been through this, they've had to go to a foster parents, they've been abused, or anything of that magnitude. You know what I mean? What is something that you could share with them that you've learned throughout this entire process?
Well, the one thing I could tell everybody is always keep looking forward. Don't let the past, you know, don't let the past catch up to you, because the past is always supposed to be behind you, not never in front of you. Mm. You just keep looking forward and don't let the negative, I lost the word completely in my head.
You lost everything. You know? Uh-huh.
Nah, but it's all about everything happens for a reason. I know it's corny, and I know everybody always tells you, and you hear it, and you sometimes you see nothing good is happening, but you know when that one good thing happens, what that good thing is. And when I mean everything happens for a reason, when I first saw my son, I knew. My oldest. When I saw my oldest son, I knew that every crappy experience that I've ever dealt with was because it was getting me ready for one of the best things of my life. Mm. And when I first held my son, wow, it was the best thing. Right there at that moment, I stopped regretting everything. Mm. I knew that if I regretted anything that happened, I basically regretted this, you know? So just keep moving forward, and don't let anybody steer you from any possible positive experiences that you might have just because you keep thinking about the negatives. Mm. That's basically it. I mean, it's not really, it's like I said, it's a corny saying,
yeah,
but everything does happen for a reason. Everything does happen for a reason.
Absolutely. And it's amazing. I mean, this has probably been, obviously, the most honest conversation I've had in a very, 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 very long time. But being able to go back in those times and feel those feelings of what we had to go through and what you've been through and everything, I mean, just look at where you are right now in your life. You know what I mean? Like, I'm telling you, out here in Thailand, Andre, it's been especially hard. Like, everything I've been through, of course, in my life, and my family, my father, all that stuff, and, you know, everything that we've been through as children. But, of course, it's all prepared me for the moment when I first moved here to Thailand. Because I had no idea I was going to be up against just a Goliath of a monster out here. You know what I mean? But now, right, seeing what I had to go through and what I've been through in the past, and that has prepared me for this moment right now, and seeing what you've been through, oh my God. I mean, it's just amazing to see what we've come out as throughout this entire process.
Right.
So, man, Andre.
Right. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was just going to sum it all up. You got anything? Did you have anything else you wanted to say, Mr. Andres Catala?
No, we're definitely going to have to continue more conversations in the future. I'll tell you that right now. we definitely got to have more. Like I said, you know, I listen to your podcast. You know, I listen to your podcast all the time. And, you got good subjects I'm sure you have a lot of listeners around the world, and sometimes some people have to know who Arsenio really is.
I know.
Who Arsenio really was,
yeah,
before they try to figure out who he really is.
Right, right. That's exactly right. That's why my personal development podcast, oh my God, I've shared them literally everything. But what I've talked about on this podcast is probably some things I haven't spoken about on my personal development podcast. And the thing is, I'm 100% unapologetically myself. You know, this is who I am. This is what I've been through. What I've been through is what has prepared me for this moment right here, right now. And so everything I've been through, I am unbelievably grateful for. I know there's been death. There's been passings. There have been so many things. Relationships have fallen apart. The tears have been shed. But maybe it was time for me to share that voice and to share those stories and to see how I've overcome them. So, yeah, guys, this is going to be, if you guys aren't following me yet on the Arsenio Buck Show page, which is on Facebook, be sure to start following me, because Andre and I, we're going to have a series that comes out on there, because, again, this had to be the realest of them all. So, Andre, man, thank you so much for tuning in, my brother. I know it's almost 10 p.m. out there, so yeah, well, past 10 p.m. now.
Past 10 p.m., you think I have a curfew.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, man, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure being on, sharing the stories, for go out there and just sharing, remembering all the memories that we've dealt with, especially Sunrise Mountain, you crying, stuff like that.
That was awesome, and that's what's good, because we shift from, of course, the really funny subjects, and then we went into the more serious stuff. You know what I mean? And that's what.
Right.
Boy, that's what, you know, that's what a bond is, you know, an inseparable one, especially. So, man, Andre, again, man, thank you so much, my brother, for coming on. And from Puerto Rico. Hey, you know what? Before you leave, Andre, I want you just give someone give three words of slang that people out there in New York say. Slang. Three phrases or three words. Up to you. Go. Nothing. Keep it G-rated, okay? Because they're kids over here. There's some kids.
I got you. I'm not going to curse somebody out. I'm sorry. You know. When somebody's telling somebody that they're mad, they tell them, well, man, I'm tight right now.
I'm tight?
That just means they're mad. I'm tight.
T-I-G-H-T.
Tight. Like when you tighten a bottle.
Oh, right. Oh, wow. I'm tight right now. Really?
That just means they're mad. Like, I'm tight right now. Also, if it's just a little bit cold outside, they'd be like, yo, man, it's tight. It's tight brick out here. Type, like T-Y-P-E. That means a little bit.
Wow. Type? Type brick?
And it's type cold, type brick. Brick means cold.
Right.
Like really cold. Mm-hmm. You know, type cold out here or outside. And another one, I would have to say the one I hate the most is when somebody does something and you like really surprised, like, oh my God, that's OD.
OD? Like,
what?
Like old dirty bastard.
ODEE.
ODEE. Oh.
It's basically that's too much. Like that's OD.
Oh. Oh, okay, because overdose, you know, overdose. Yeah, I got it,
OD means overdose.
Yeah.
It's too much.
Oh.
So they'd be like, that's OD. I'm like, yeah, you know. And I'm from Vegas. I'm still getting used to the slang out here. I've been out here for almost 10 years, and
right.
I'm still not used to it.
Oh, my
God.
And
I still don't speak the slang.
Wow. That's craziness, man. Oh, man. We had it all in this podcast. I wish I probably could have went more into that, but a lot of people probably won't be, you know, speaking any slang, especially OD anytime soon. That's crazy as hell. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I hope not. I don't want to see people around the world saying, hey, I mean, it's type cold out here. It's type hot.
Oh my goodness. All right, and so with that being said, guys, thank you so much for tuning in to another English language and personal development podcast, because boy, we had a lot of things and a lot of, man, what is that, a fly? I hate those damn flies. Sorry. Anyways, guys, with that being said, thank you so much for tuning in to another English language podcast and personal development. I'll be bringing Andre on, of course, Be Live TV, the Arsenio Buck Show, very, very soon, so make sure you're following me over there. Andre, again, thank you so much for tuning in, my brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
And guys, with that being said, I'm your host, Arsenio, as usual, over and out.